Hey, everybody, it's the Monty Man from Take 12 Recovery Radio. Listen, I got a favor to ask of you. Before we start the episode of this week's Came to Believe Recovery podcast, I'd like for you to pause right now and go get a pen, a piece of paper, or a pencil, because you're going to need it later on in this show. It's going to be a very simple thing you're going to need to write down, but you really are going to need it. So go ahead, pause the broadcast, and go get it, and come right back and hit the play button.
The views expressed on this episode of the Came to Believe Recovery podcast do not necessarily reflect those of Take 12 Recovery Radio or its affiliate. The opinions on this show should not be taken as medical, psychological, or professional advice and are those of the host, co-host, and guest. Take 12 Recovery Radio is not affiliated with any particular 12-step fellowship.
Well, greetings, my friends. I am the Monty Man from Take 12 Recovery Radio, and this is the Came to Believe Recovery Podcast. And now, here are your podcasting broadcasters, Tom Williams and Alicia Martinez, to introduce this week's show.
Welcome, everybody, to Came to Believe Recovery podcast. I am Alicia from the West Coast. We have Tom over there from the East Coast and our producer, Monty Man, who's also on the West Coast with me. Hello, you guys.
Hey, Alicia.
Hey. Hey, so Alicia. We wanted to start this off just quickly with something that we want to address. We did get an email from somebody, and we're going to start with that and just address that. And so we take that to you guys also to hear, like, you can email or contact us with questions, concerns, and we're not going to hide from them, and we're going to address them as best as we can. So Monty, let me turn it over to you. We'll start with you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to echo that sentiment. Folks, you don't have to agree with us. If you do, that's great too. So if you have objections or you have ideas or you have questions because you're not sure of something, these guys will do their very best to answer them and address them. And please, you can send them to me at take12radio@comcast.net. That's T-A-K-E, the number 12, radio@comcast.net. We'll make sure that they get them. So one such post, which was posted on one of the YouTube versions of the show, kind of this person shared their bit of a disagreement with us, or maybe an uneasiness they were feeling. So, Tom, why don't you go ahead and read what this person posted on our YouTube version?
All right, thanks. And thanks, Monty. And Alicia, and I just want to echo what the two of you have said. I mean, we want to hear from you. If you're confused, if you don't understand, and in some cases, we want to hear from you if you're dead against us. Because we know there's other people that are, and we'd love to talk about it with you on air. We're not afraid of anybody or afraid of a topic. So let me read this. This is a comment that was sent in by a listener, and it says, so this is from Sarah Gaffey, I would assume from her handle. And she says that 12-step recovery, this is a quote, 12-step recovery is not meant to be about any one particular religion. I believe in Jesus, but you're going to lose people of any other religion, spiritual orientation with this podcast. So that's a really interesting comment for us. And it's not an uncommon comment, I think, for that we receive. Came to Believe Recovery as far as and I think AA in general, and even some churches get this, a comment that is, I think, rooted in what's your definition of religion, right? We were talking before the show came on, and Monty and Alicia and I were like, religion or spirituality has a subjectiveness to it for people, that they will define religion one way. And so then they put us in that box, or they define spirituality one way, and then they put us in that box when we talk spirituality. And it's not ever what we meant. So to Sarah, I would say that while I believe what you were talking about is one particular denomination, I think that what people take with us, guys, and I'm good, this is just my experience, is that when they hear us talk about the God of the Bible and Christianity and those that follow Jesus, which is what the founders followed, we aren't going to change that, and we aren't going to tell you any different. It is what they followed. It is what the program was based on, the Bible. It wasn't based on the Quran, and it wasn't based on any other text. We know that's not good news for some people that want to have it be all things for all people, but it wasn't. When in actuality, it is all things for all people. Did I say that, Monty?
Yeah.
I did say that. But that people hear religion and they hear us talk about Jesus and they somehow put the box around it on what they've experienced in their life from the Christian world, the Judeo-Christian, the church they were raised in, the people they know, the people in churches. And so they get a bias about it. And we don't like that bias either, Sarah. We take effort in the retreats to break that bias from people. And we want people to come in with their denominational bias and their denominational issues, which it tends to be. It's not always, but it tends to be. And talk to them about breaking that structure that they've been, that didn't work for them in on many levels, and allowing them access to the creator supernatural intelligence of the universe, which the Big Book and 12 Steps does say that they want you to reach out to. And it also says that it, for them starting at a place that they didn't particularly name him, except they were open to the supernatural creator, did lead them to their belief and understanding of the God that was the God of the Bible. They started with it. So while I will disagree with you that there's no religion in the Big Book, I think there is a particular religion. If you define religion as this big picture category of Christianity or a follower of Jesus or the believer in the New Testament of the Bible, then I would say, yes, it does talk about that actually in it. If you are commenting about a denomination, a specific way, a specific set of doctrine or dogma, then you're right. It does not talk about that. But it's certainly a subjective thing, guys. It depends on how you define religion. People call me religious all the time, Monty, and I say, no, I'm not religious. I'm spiritual. I'm a follower. I'm not religious, because that religious means that you follow some strict rules and guidelines and stuff that to many people. Anyway, so that's my 2 cents on that.
Well, that takes the relationship out of it, right? When people say you're so religious or something to me, I kind of say, you know, I don't know what they're thinking about that word, but for me, it's more of a religious. I mean, it's a relationship that I have. And then maybe I am doing those practices that are in the religion. But I mean, there's so many, like you said, there's so many people that say spirituality and they mean this, and then some mean this, and some mean this. So we have to know where the context is. And I mean, right. Sadly, we don't have her here to talk to us. So we're kind of reading into the email of what we think it means.
Right.
But she can always email again.
Yeah. So I'd like to say this. It's interesting because in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, when it's in the chapter Working with Others, it says that if we're working with the new guy, the prospect, we should get kind of an idea of his religious leanings. Why do we want to know that? Mm-hmm. Right? Because we're going to be talking about religious leanings, and we want to make sure we don't alienate him. We want to make sure that we're not condemning or criticizing his belief system, even if it's totally anti-God in the beginning, right? But we want to know. We want to know. So we're going to talk about that stuff. You know, and the big book talks about, you know, hey, we're going to talk about God. And that's not good orderly direction or group of drunks. We're going to talk about God, the creator. We're going to. It's Bill is warning us, look out. This is a controversial issue, but we're going to talk about it, you know. But you guys, I think it always makes me chuckle a little bit when people, even Christians that I know, when they object to not religion, but to organized religion. They put that word in there, organized. And I always say, what do you mean by that? And nobody can tell me. And so, but I did have a guy, I did have a gentleman who told me, he says, I object to organized religion. That's why I love Alcoholics Anonymous so much. And I said, what is it about organized religion that you object to? He said, well, they stand behind a pulpit and they pound a book and they say it's the only way. They're very dogmatic. This, in this book, this is the only way. I said, okay, what else? I said, I don't like the fact that they ask for money. You know, I feel like I'm being prodded to give money. I said, okay, what else? Well, I'm not real into the pomp and circumstance, you know, all the candles, because we know some Christian denominations are very big on atmosphere, right? And stained glass and candles and more today with, you know, the lighting and all sorts of. I don't really like that. I don't like the candle thing. It's just too weird to me. I said, okay, what else? I don't like that we're criticized for what we believe if we differ for the person that's talking or preaching. I said, oh, okay. I said, you know what you just described to me? You described to me your typical AA speaker meeting.
Exactly. It sounds like an AA meeting to me.
Yeah. So I could say, well, I don't like organized AA meetings. Well, let's go to unorganized ones, I guess. Well, we have no problem doing that. So right. It's interesting. People really, I appreciate the fact that people have feelings and thoughts surrounded around their feelings. But a lot of times, myself included, when I'm expressing my feelings, it doesn't go any deeper than that. When I'm questioned about what that means, I really don't know. I just don't know.
So we either answered you or we didn't answer you, or we weren't meant to change your mind, Sarah, but we did want to clear up what we are talking about. And when we talk about the God of the Bible and the following of Jesus, we're relaying to you what I can speak to, who my higher power is and what has saved me. And we can speak to who the founders and those that taught us were doing. We can. And that's what Came to Believe does. So we're standing true and right to what we know is true. And Came to Believe Recovery, and the Clarence Snyder lineage through Dr. Bob and them, this is what they were doing. We know that. As I always say, you certainly don't have to do it if you don't want to. We're not saying we're the only way, but we're saying if you want to do it, we do know how they did it. And we're not going to make it different. Right. There's enough different already.
Yeah. You know, and when it was the most
effective. There's a million other things you can do.
Yeah. The most effective is this way. So we hope that people want to do it this way. But yeah, like you said, there's other options and other ways.
Yeah, if I'm going to test something out, if I'm going to construct a new home, I'm going to check out the different contractors and I'm going to go with the guy that's got the best reputation. I'm going to go with the guy that does the best job, that produces the best product, right? Why wouldn't I? And it has to date been the most successful application and implementation of the 12-step process when it was focused on the creator of the universe, the God who is God, Jesus Christ. You don't have to like that or anything, but that's just the truth. I want to say something here, and I want to make sure that I am correct about this. So you guys correct me if I'm wrong. Came to Believe, this podcast, Came to Believe Recovery Podcast, and Came to Believe Recovery.org does not claim affiliation with the organization of Alcoholics Anonymous. True?
True.
Yeah. So you know, we as individuals, that may be a different story, but as far as like Take 12 Recovery Radio goes, you know, there's a disclaimer at the beginning of the show. As far as Came to Believe Recovery goes, you know, we're not bound by specific traditions or whatever, rhetoric or whatever, because we're not that. So when people put that on us, well, you gotta follow this and you gotta be, well, no, we don't. And I don't say that out of disrespect. I just want to make sure people are clear. I, for one, don't speak for Alcoholics Anonymous as a organization.
So, Monty, it's interesting that you say that. When you read, Alicia and I were having this discussion, or she was stressing over the belief or somebody that told her that to be official AA meeting, you have to follow the traditions. You have to do certain things. And when you read the actual rules inside what to start an AA meeting, it does not say that you have to follow the traditions. It's very open in what the group conscience can decide it wants to do.
There's a lot of wiggle room.
Now, right, which means they're not as that organized, actually, which I think is a downfall, guys. So Came to Believe Recovery, you know, this is a conversation we'll get down someday. I really personally believe that them not taking money and not organizing a little back in the 40s was a mistake. I think that they should have and just held themselves accountability, because the idea that one of the traditions is not that the 12 steps are the focus of a meeting is an aberration to me, if that's a word. It's unconscionable. We are not part of whatever, we don't fall under a set of rules that actually, when you look at the rules, aren't even any rules. So I could say, theoretically, Monty, we are part of AA because we've got a group conscience. We decided to do this. We're following the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and we use the book. So we might be more AA than most AA is, actually.
I agree. My mentor, Chris S., always says, an AA group has more right to violate a tradition in the 12 traditions than AA has, as an organization, has the right to punish them for doing so. They're written in jello. They're meant to be written in jello, because if it's not flexible, it breaks. Right. But yeah, that's a whole nother show.
That is.
Do we have a show on that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we can add that to our list.
What is AA?
But yeah. But today what we're talking about is the topic is what the big book says and what it doesn't say.
So Alicia, let's take a break and get that out of the way. Okay. And then we'll come back with the topic. Right. Okay. Folks, don't go away more with Alicia and Tom on the Came to Believe Recovery podcast right after this. Hey, you. Yeah, you. Listen, Came to Believe Recovery is excited to launch our brand new 12-step recovery Zoom meetings tomorrow, Wednesday, April 3rd at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and every Wednesday following. Now, these meetings will be focused on the spiritual disciplines of the 12 steps found in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I know you have your pen or pencil ready that we asked for you to get at the beginning of this episode, right? Great. So this is what I want you to write down. It's your Zoom meeting ID and passcode. The ID is 833-6252-3238. Your passcode is 597-493. Now, if you miss that, no problem. Just visit take12radio.com and click on the Came to Believe Recovery podcast banner. And the meeting ID and passcode, they're going to be listed right there on that page. So get ready for a great meeting worth depth and weight as we launch the brand new Came to Believe 12-step Zoom meeting every Wednesday, beginning tomorrow at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. See you there. And now, back to our show. All right, welcome back. You have tuned in to the Came to Believe Recovery podcast with Tom Williams and Alicia Martinez. And Alicia was introducing the topic for this week.
Yes, we wanted to discuss what the big book actually says and what it doesn't say. And we have a few topics here, but the first one I wanted to start with was how the big book says recovered, and we seem to hear other things of recovering or no mention of the word recovered in meetings outside of what it says in the big book. So where do we want to start with that? Either one of you, let's do it.
Well, it's just what we said. It's what's in the big book and what isn't in the big book. And so what's our basic text when we talk to someone and they say, you can't call yourself recovered? And we say, if you open up to the first page with writing on it, really, after the thing, it says, the third edition I have says the story of how many thousands of men and women have recovered from alcoholism. Mm-hmm. So the big book does say that. Mm-hmm. So we're going to say it. And what it does not say is that we're always recovering. There's recovering is used in a couple of places in the book. But if you look at the context of it, it's never that we're going in a constant state of recovering ever. It is that the point of it was to be recovered. So it is in the book, guys. Sorry.
Yeah, it's forward to the first edition to show other alcoholics, this is the purpose of the book, precisely how we have recovered. The main purpose of this book.
And it says solution all the way through. So if something is solved and there are solutions, then we would be probably recovered as well.
So go ahead, Tom, I'm sorry.
So I want to add, because this helps us maybe with our comment too, and it bolsters that. When you look at, We Agnostics, right? It says, lack of power was our dilemma, right? We had to find a power we could live by, and had to be one that was greater than ourselves, obviously, but where were we going to find it? Now listen to what it says. Well, that's exactly what this book is about. What's it about? Well, precisely how they recovered is number one, the main objective, right? That's the main purpose. And the main objective here is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem.
Yeah.
That means we've written a book we believe to be spiritual as well as moral. And it means, of course, we're going to talk about God.
Dun, dun, dun.
So we're going to show you how we recovered. And how we recovered was we found the power that was God. And the step further we take at Came to Believe Recovery is we tell you who the God of the founders was. That's just hidden a little bit in this book, but it's not really hidden that well. If you read this with a certain lens, guys, it isn't hidden that well. It's pretty plain to see what they were doing.
So I got to interject here. Page 11 in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is Bill's story. And what a lot of people don't know is Bill had a negative prejudice towards religiosity. His grandfather was very bitter towards the church, and Bill kind of carried that with him. But he says on page 11, he says to Christ. So for those who don't see Jesus Christ's name in the book, here it is. To Christ, I conceded the certainty of good man, not too closely followed by those who claimed him. His moral teaching, most excellent. For myself, I had adopted those parts which seemed convenient and not too difficult. The rest I discarded. And then he goes on to explain how that was not the proper use of this thing. He talks about how that was his prejudice. Mm-hmm. He cherry-picked, and we shouldn't do that. You know, so he's talking about Christ here. It's interesting. Why doesn't he, if Christ is only just this guy with good morals, well, why didn't he include, Buddha or Muhammad or the guy next door? I mean, why didn't he include? He didn't. He specifically named Christ. That tells me everything that I need to know. He didn't name a doctrine. He didn't name a denomination. He named God himself.
Mm-hmm. So there you go, guys. What's in the book and what isn't? Let's go check. What's next, Alicia?
Can I add something really quick on the recovered thing before we move on?
Yeah.
Okay, sure. really fast. I talk to folks about this. I go, look, if you have a peanut allergy, right, and you eat peanuts, you're going to swell up. You can't breathe. You're going to end up in the hospital. And while you're in the hospital and they hit you with the EpiPen, for a time as you're in there, while you're healing up, you are in recovery. Once the swelling goes down, they release you. You walk out the door. You have recovered from the peanut allergy. Are you still allergic to peanuts? Absolutely. Absolutely. So you're recovered, not cured. So if you're cured, the illness itself, the allergic reaction, if you put it into your body, is gone. You can put it into your body and nothing bad happens if you're cured. If you've recovered, the symptoms are gone. I'm not stealing from mom's purse. I'm not pulling the vanishing act. I'm not ending up in jail. I'm not, you know, the symptoms are gone. Am I still allergic to alcohol? Yes, but I have recovered from the damage that the alcohol abuse had caused. See, I think that's, and people go, oh, well, that makes sense now. But again, it's that word, just like the word religion, right? It's so subjective.
Right, right.
People get confused.
Yeah. So Monty, the one I like to use, diabetes.
Yes.
You can have diabetes and then change all your diet, lose weight, do what you need to do, exercise and be recovered from it.
Yes.
But you could get it again if you did the wrong things.
Start eating
cupcakes.
But while
you're recovered from it, you don't have any of the symptoms at all. Why would you say, no one would keep saying I'm recovering from diabetes still once you've recovered from it. But could you get it again? Yeah, if you start eating and doing the dumb things, you could get it again. You'd get all the symptoms.
Yeah.
But why would you go on with your life? It's just, and you're right, when I tell that story too, Monty, people go, oh, well, that's what we're talking about, guys. That's what they were talking about.
That is.
And this recovering thing keeps people sick, guys. It makes me mad. It keeps people sick. It keeps people feeling bad about themselves. It keeps people thinking that they're less than and that they aren't worthy and they're not valuable. It does.
Yep.
It's a terrible mindset. It is not what this program was about. It was not. This program did not promise a struggle for the rest of your life. It didn't. Mm-mm. It promised you a solution and a victory and freedom from all that stuff. A way out. A path.
Amen. Whew. Amen. Preaching Betty.
Drop the mic.
Let me drop my mic real quick.
Drop the mic.
Okay. Let's talk about
next one.
Doing the steps quickly versus step a month or step in 16 months or whatever that. And I love, Tom, when you talk to people and they say, well, that's not in the book or however they say. And then you say, well, where is it in the book that says you need to take 16 months? Because that's not in here. Right. But if you look at it, it does seem pretty quickly, especially when you see that they were doing it back then sometimes in an afternoon. That's what, 5 hours?
And doesn't this speak to if you want, if it says they recovered and I want that, then I should do what they do, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I want what you got. Well, then do what I do. No.
Can't have it.
Exactly. And we need to find this person because I've been saying this. If we could find somebody who never heard of Alcoholics Anonymous or anything ever, mm-hmm. we handed them the book. They'd never go to a meeting, number one. And they would do the steps and they'd probably do it within a short period of time because if you start doing it, it's a progressive thing that walks you through and it's continuous and it requires the continuity to work because they work together, the tools, right? 1, 2, and 3 would be done in 20 minutes, most likely.
Yeah.
And 4, 5 would be done over maybe a day or two if you had to go talk to somebody and find somebody, but it would be done very quickly.
Not 4 or 5.
And you'd be on
7.
What?
I mean,
yeah, then you'd be on to 6 and 7 and 8 and 9 take a while. You do it for the rest of your life if you have to. And then you're working 10, 11, and 12. It's teaching you a process of how to live the rest of your life. I'm going to commence this way of living. Step 10 says, So what is happening in the steps? They're teaching us a way of living and a way to continue to stay in spiritual fit condition. Says it again, spiritually fit. That's the daily reprieve that we have.
Yeah, that's our battle cry, man.
Right, right. So there is no indications in the book to take one a month. There's no wording about it. There's no instruction that says that. So while there's no particular, and this is what I do say, at least there's no particular instruction to say that you do it in an afternoon. There's tons of indication like next and immediately, and we took an hour. There's lots of very clear indication to say that they moved quickly through this.
In fact,
how do you do it next?
And from three to four steps, three to four, it says next we launched. That's an Air Force term.
Right.
It means 0 to 200 in seconds. Right. We don't go, okay, we're done with step three. Okay, see you next week. No. When I work with a sponsee, we go steps one, two, and three, and we go right into four, and we do all of that within an hour or less.
So Alicia will always say at retreat, all. What does all, when she looks up all, what does it mean?
All.
It means all. And when you look up next.
It means next.
What does next mean? It means next. It's the immediate thing that follows the thing you just did. Go to Webster's. It's something like that.
It doesn't say stop.
So, yeah. Let me
why practically, how did it become a year and 16 months?
Treatment. Treatment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And people maybe just practical reasons, like their sponsor doesn't have time or doesn't know. And then there's Celebrate Recovery that has four books that you need to get through. So it does take 12 to 16 months to get through their program, which is, I mean, deep and you're getting into it, but that's not what they did.
Yeah, go do that afterwards. You know, go through your 12 steps, have a spiritual awakening as a result. And by the way, you cannot have a spiritual awakening as a result of steps you haven't done. And you do that. And then if you want to go back and you want to dig into the muck and the mire, you're free to do that. But I got a hunch that if you do have that spiritual awakening, you're gonna know something you didn't know when you started that you don't need to.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because you're going to be free.
I think too. I know it is that the sponsors and many people don't know. Number one, and there's people who don't believe that this can happen so quickly. How could this be?
Yeah, they just laugh at you.
And yeah, full surrender. I think that the people coming in aren't making full surrenders, Alicia. We know that the rooms, the addiction rooms, and Alcoholics Anonymous are filled with a bunch of people that were not the same kind of people that were filled in the 1930s.
Right.
There's a whole class of people that may or may not be addicts. And so they're not at this place of desperation where they feel they have to take the action as deeply as we did, as I did. I had to take this action and connect. I had no choice. When you do it and you're there, it had to be done quickly. I don't know where it came from. And I do think psychology came into this and some stuff too. Therapy, Monty, with you got to overthink things and we got to do things forever and was part of that idea that these steps were to be taken over time, some lengthy time, but once a month or once, I mean, we just don't know where that is. How about this one? Get your walking around legs before you do the steps. You got to go to meetings for a while.
Oh, God.
Well, that's not in the book, right?
No.
And if I could do that now. If you need, listen, guys, I'll tell you this, because we're going to talk about this in a minute, meaning some of the things that are said in AA today that are maybe not horrible. They're just not in the book, right?
Right.
90 and 90 and stuff like that. They're not in the book. But is it a horrible idea if you're not quite sure and you need to go and sit amongst some people and listen for a few weeks or a month or two to help you decide whether you got a problem or not? I guess that would be okay if that worked. That might be a great function of the fellowship in the meetings, right?
Mm-hmm. Well,
could we say that?
That's not necessarily a bad thing, but see, this speaks to the reason that people that have had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps step up to the plate and make the approach to sponsor the new guy immediately. Because then they can guide them. They can meet with them. They have coffee with them. And then they can kind of see, you know, is this guy going to be okay to kind of listen for a while? You know, but if he has no guidance, the newcomer should not, the guy in there for the very first time should not walk out of that room before somebody makes an approach to him or her. And that's not happening. That's not
happening.
It's not happening.
Now, that's the other thing is too, is Monty, once they do decide, the next thing you do is the steps. As soon as they say, yes, I am one of you and I am unmanageable. I'm an alcoholic and my life's unmanageable. Well, what's next? Not good for you. Now more meetings. It's all right. Let's do the steps immediately.
Yeah, it's like, make a gratitude list and call me next week. Now, the gratitude lists are great. And I have my sponsees make them and everything. But that is not the first order of business.
It's not. So I think I might write a white paper on this, but this is a good time to use this metaphor that I use, or I guess our analogy. Let's call the 12 steps 12 tools, right? Like tools, like screwdrivers, wrenches, hammer, blah, blah, blah. And you're going to build a house, and you need 12 tools to build the house. These are the 12 tools you need to build the house. All the different things that the house will need to be built correctly and stand firm forever are these 12 tools. If I give you one of the tools, Monty, when can you start building with just one tool?
With just one, I could start today.
What could you start doing? Could you really start building?
Well, it depends on what tool you give. If you give me the tool that starts
Look what he's saying, right?
Yeah, right, right.
So if I give you a screwdriver.
No.
I can screw some screws into a panel, but the house isn't being built.
No.
If I give you all 12 at one time, let's say, and we're going to say that you don't know how to use any of them.
Right.
But if I get expert at one, it's still going to take me 12 months. But if I'm expert at these 12, I have them, I've practiced, then I can use them together to start building the house. A year. And I've forgotten what I do with the screwdriver by the time I get to what I'm going to do with the nail gun,
exactly.
Right? Which was the other part of this, right? It didn't flow together. But if I give you all 12 and take you through a process of showing you how they work and then guide you in getting better at them, that house gets built right away.
Yes.
It starts getting built.
Yeah.
You make mistakes, but you have one of the tools is to fix the mistakes.
Yeah.
So you can pull the nail out with the back of the hammer. See what I'm saying? This analogy, it works.
Yeah.
It works.
Yeah.
It does. You can start building day one. Maybe not great, but it's better than where you were before without it being built. So the steps got to be done. They're meant to work together, guys. A few of them are meant to flow right one into the other. The principle from one is needed for the next one. It needs to be fresh in your mind. They build on each other. It was never meant any other way. It was never done any other way. And when it was done and most successful, that's how it was done. Come to Came to Believe Recovery Retreat anywhere. And this is what we're going to show you. Guys, if it doesn't work for you, you had a nice weekend, maybe in a place like Malibu. You know.
And it says, I think Bill refers to it as a spiritual tool kit. It's the whole kit.
The whole kit.
It's the whole kit.
Yeah. Yeah. And remember, the steps aren't suggested.
No,
it's a program that's suggested
as a whole piece.
As a whole,
yeah.
As a whole piece,
yeah.
So we beat that to death. But that's what's not in the book, and what is in the book, guys. There's nowhere in the book that says that it takes that long. Lots of indications that it was done very quickly.
Right.
Check.
All right. Here comes a doozy. Are you guys ready?
Uh oh.
Conception of a God versus your own concept, or whatever they think that means. Right?
Ah.
So let's hit that one.
I like to go with this. So I will say this at retreats, right? I say, Alicia's heard me say this a bunch of times. I'll say, all right, hold on, guys. How many people think that what the steps say is you can have a God of your understanding and he can be your conception? Half the room raises their hand.
Yeah.
And that's how it is. And I say, it does not say that. They're separate statements. It says, they turned their will and the life over to the care of God as we understood him. It's written in past tense. They're talking about what they did and the God they understood. It does not reference that you get to pick a God of your understanding. That's not what that statement references. All it's saying is we turned our will over to the God as we understood him. My sponsor said, if you want what they have, we better find out who that God was, right? What was good advice? And your own conception is different than concept, right, Alicia? This is what you're saying. Your concept of God could be anything. My concept is that it's this water bottle.
Yeah.
My concept is that it's
a light bulb
and people. But your own conception means how you view the supernatural, spiritual creator of the universe. It was put in that box. It's in the book. The book says, as long as it's your own conception of this category. So they never meant it to be a concept. They never meant it to be the power of the room. They never meant it to be inanimate objects. They never meant it to be a light bulb ever.
Bill Borchert, who was the screenwriter to My Name is Bill W. And also When Love Is Not Enough, the Lois Wilson story. Bill Borchert was on my show a couple of times, and he explained to me, and he and his wife were great friends with Lois and Bill, and particularly Lois. And when Dr. Bob told Bill, basically, okay, buddy boy, why don't you try your own conception of God? He wasn't talking about God is one of these different things. What he was talking about was the nature of God. He was talking, because Bill had these ideas that his grandfather had. God was punishing. God was cruel. God was judgmental. Mm-hmm. God was, and he was telling him, okay, what's your conception of God? Should he be loving? Should he be kind? Should he be forgiving? That's what Ebby was saying to him. And so we've misrepresented that too. But again, people don't know what they don't know. And until you start digging into some of this stuff, actually, you know what? If you'll just read what's in this book for what it says and stop listening to the guy behind the lectern at the meeting, mm-hmm. you might get it right. Oh, now I'm preaching.
Yeah, listen to what it says. Right? I love it. So look, it says this. Much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. That's their belief in his nature. That's exactly what you said, Monty. But it says this, our own conception, however, inadequate. So it calls your own conception inadequate.
Yep.
Was sufficient to make the approach and effect a contact with him, with a capital H. So they said you could take away the nature, start with his nature, that you can conceive of a nature that's okay with you, that is something that you can start with, and that let him connect with you. It's what they did. It says it right here, right? Yeah. I didn't write the book, guys. It's from the big book. It's the same book we're talking about. It's what's in the book. It is in the book.
On
stuff
page
like this.
47,
and then it goes on this.
On 47, it says, when therefore we speak to you of God, we mean mm-hmm. Your own conception of God. And then it goes on, and at the start, this was all we needed to commence. So at the start, that's fine. Your own conception is fine. To affect our first conscious relation with God as we understood him afterward. So we continue, especially with step 11 later, we found ourselves accepting many things which then seemed entirely out of reach. That was growth. But if we wish to grow, we had to begin somewhere. So we used our own conception, however limited it was. So you can start there. I think many people start there and they don't even understand where they're starting from. And then they stay there. They think that's fine. I'm going to stay with the light bulb. And 10 years later, I'm still believing in the light bulb. And that's not what this says.
It is clear, right? It is clear here that it would be inadequate and it's limiting. And it was only a pathway. Never was your own conception supposed to be an end.
It says, as soon as a man can say that he does believe or he is willing to believe, we empathetically assure him that he is on his way. On his way to what? To a deeper understanding of the Creator. Mm-hmm. He's on his way. He may not be there yet, but he's moving. They're called steps, not stops.
Right. And then step 11, right? Continue. Pray to God for to improve our conscious contact. Improve our conscious contact.
Yeah.
With him. Praying only for the will of him for us and the power to carry that out. So we get you connected, and then there's a process to grow. Improve your conscious contact. You get that in 3. You start to have an experience in 5. Things start happening. You get the promises all through 10. And then in 11, you take this relationship to the next level and you become recovered. It's what they did, guys. It's what started this whole thing. It's what has the three of us relatively, that's not a strong enough word. Or totally committed to bringing this message to people, to straightening these things out, to just clearing up misconceptions, to just showing people, helping you to put the lens on that you should have on when you read this book. It's just shocking to me how many people come up to me, Monty, after retreats and say, that's not in the book. Where's that in the book? Who've read the book 100 times. It's not in the book. Yeah, it's right here.
Yeah.
I had a lady walk out of a meeting in Long Island with me because she said, that's not in the book, the conception inadequate and at the start. She said, it's not in there. I said, well, yeah, it is. It's in the book.
Yeah.
She looked at me, she said, that's not in there. I said, it is in there, here. She got up and walked out, whatever. You don't win them all.
Right.
Right?
Right.
But maybe a seed was planted.
But we're not going to stop and tell you that there is something else. Guys, we are as compassionate, and we're going to meet you right where you are, and we're going to let you start. But we're not going to lie to you. We're going to let you move through it, and we're going to walk by side with you and help you to an understanding. But listen, Monty and Alicia and I don't have anything else to give you.
Yeah.
We don't have anything else to give you. If you want something else, you got to go somewhere else. And I'm easy to say that. I had a guy call me once, Monty, and said, what I want for you as a sponsor for me is, you know, I want you to go to meetings with me. And I want this. I don't really want the God thing. And, you know, maybe we'll talk a little bit about the steps, but I just need someone to come with me to meetings and all. I'm just on the phone going, you need to find somebody else. I said, there are people out there that will do that with
you. Yeah, sure.
I said, but I don't know what to do. That's not what I did.
They're
That's
called peer support.
I can't help you with that.
They're called peer support specialists. Yeah, yeah, they'll pick you out and take your name.
So I don't know how to do that. That's not what I do. But if you want me to come and support you at a meeting as we begin working through the steps, and you're willing to do that, and we have to talk about God. Yes, not a church, not a thing. We'll talk all about that eventually. We have to talk about it. Then I'm happy. Otherwise, yeah. I'm not.
Because don't you guys think, Alicia, don't you guys think that if we tell them anything else, we're not being honest with them? And
we're not.
And you know, one of the things that I'll ask the prospect if he approaches me, I'll say, I got a question for you. Before we go do anything, would you be okay if the time we meet and spend together that I lie to you? The answer is, well, no, of course not. Okay, I just put that pin in there because I want you to remember that. You don't want me to lie to you. And it'll invariably come up. He'll disagree with something. And I don't, you know, like you said, it's not in the book. Now, well, I'm not going to lie to you, right? So let me show you.
Right.
You know, you told me you didn't want me to lie to you, so... And it's going to be uncomfortable. When you change the way you think, when you've been going down the road of the toilet for so long, it's going to be uncomfortable because there's something comfortable about the dysfunction. It's just going to be. It's going to be. If you're going to be stretched, if you're going to be challenged, if you want to grow, if you want to become productive, if you want to help others, there's going to be, Chris Schroeder calls them the 12 inconveniences. They're just going to be.
Right. You know, and then, you know, let's talk, you know, three of the things that aren't in the book. One is what? 90 is not in the book. Meaning makers make it's not in the book. And what's the other one? We had another one there, right?
Well, we have something like doing the 4-step over and over and over and doing the steps over and over.
Right.
Oh, every year.
That's a good thing to talk about that's not in the book.
Yeah,
they tell you to do it once. They tell you to do a 10th step, guys. There's nowhere that indicates to do the steps over and over again. That's a great point. It's not in the book. What is in the book is you do them once and you live on 10, 11, and 12. But 90 and 90, like, it's not in the book, even though we will all concede here, maybe it's not such a horrible idea for some people to have to stick with some meetings. I did 100 meetings my first couple months just because I needed something to do. It was killing time for me, and it was helping me get into a group sure. of people that just kept me till they got my life in line. But then I wasn't doing meetings like that anymore. And Meeting Makers Make It is such a half-truth. If the meeting's taking you through the steps, yes. If not, I mean, I just don't know how to even comment to that. We want to do a shirt called Step Takers Make It.
Yeah, it's not the
not meeting makers.
It's the meeting. It's not. Right. It's the steps you take, not the meetings you make.
Make it right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a terrible thing when a newcomer drilled into their head, and this is what happens, guys. You got to go to meetings. If you didn't make it, you didn't go to enough meetings. You got to go to another meeting. Got to go to another meeting. I've heard people not go to work, have family problems, miss kids' recitals, because somebody told them they had to be in meetings every minute of the day. And that is not what it was about.
No.
It was not. And I have never uttered the word in this sobriety, I need a meeting. I've never uttered those words. Mm. Like, I need a meeting to stay sober today. I guess I could say I need a meeting because I really want to go help somebody. I need to go help. I'm feeling like I need to help somebody. I think that would be the proper context to use it in.
Yeah, but
should we go to meetings? It's a different story, right?
Alicia, what were you going to say?
Yeah.
No, I was just going to say again, maybe it's the wording again, and how you're defining that is different than kind of what other people might be defining, because I feel going to a meeting, it's not, and I'm not saying I need to go to a meeting, but I do feel better sharing and getting it out and being around people like me. And, but so I think again, it's language, right? And I don't
So you're attending
like
the fellowship.
Yeah.
I would say you're attending the fellowship, and we didn't get to that, but there's a difference between that. There's the steps in the fellowship. The fellowship has a place for sure.
I think you guys, I think it comes down to what are you dependent on? And so if I'm, meeting dependent, and not God dependent, down the road, that's not going to fare well with my process of recovery to a place of recovered. Even if I'm step dependent, you guys, if I'm step dependent and not dependent on the one the steps are pointing me to, then I'm dependent on the method instead of the method giver. If I'm prayer dependent and not dependent on the one I'm praying to, I'm dependent on the method again. And so what we have is a lot of people that are meeting dependent. And you know, in the beginning, I get it. I mean, I needed a safe place to go because I was surrounded around a bunch of meth heads and people that, I mean, I had to get out. I had to do a geographical a little bit, and I had to surround myself around people that I could be safe with, you know. But again, just like the God issue, it was a place to start. The whole purpose of the steps is to move on from there. And if I'm going to miss, you know, now at 26 years of sobriety, if I miss a meeting, I'm going to drink. I've missed the point for 26 years.
You sure have.
That's insane.
And I think that's the point. I want to just, my disclaimer is, you know, I mean, we have in the past, Monty, and Alicia knows, we get accused of being meeting bashers, you know, because we'll, and we aren't.
No, you're not meeting bashers. You're just, you're trying to dispel a concept that's actually harmful.
Right, exactly. Meetings, you know, and there's meetings going on all over the world. And if somebody goes to that meeting and I guess doesn't drink today and find some fellowship and find some camaraderie and never takes the steps, but don't drink, I guess, how could that be all bad? It can't be all bad. They found a place. They didn't die that day.
They may not be alcoholic.
But if they're white knuckling it.
And they might not be alcoholic, right.
Yeah, but if they're white knuckling it and angry and now turning to food, but they're still going to AA, or they're beating their husband or their wife, but they're sober, that's not going to work. And
no. All we hope is that they run into one of us coming to one of the meetings one day.
All they've done is change symptoms. They haven't changed the root problem.
Exactly.
We're almost out of time, you guys. Do we have any more?
That was it.
I've got one. If I could say it.
Yeah.
Progress, not perfection. Now people say, well, that's in the book. Yeah, out of context. It says spiritual progress, not spiritual perfection. So I've known people say, hey, John, can you help move my couch tomorrow? Well, you know, I just live one day at a time. I can't plan that far ahead. Come on, John. Well, you know, it's progress, not perfection. Nah, you're taking it out of context. That's not it at all. Right. It's important that we understand the depth of the spiritual healing that has to take place. And it's spiritual progress, because I'm not going to be a spiritual giant. But it is progress. You got to be progressing, you know. So we use the excuse, well, it's progress, not perfection, to give ourselves a break and convince ourselves it's OK to stop. And you guys say something about, what was it? You what is it? You didn't do something, you stopped. What is that phrase you guys use?
You're not stuck.
You stopped. Well, I'm just kind of stuck because it's progress, not perfection. No, you stopped. Mm-hmm. You know. Right. Yeah, so that one always drives me crazy.
That's an Alicia-ism.
Yes.
I love it. I absolutely love it.
Well, doesn't that tie into then at the start, you can start with your own conception of a God.
Yeah.
But don't stay there.
Don't stay there.
Grow spiritually and grow and go. And look at your life. Are you more loving? Are you more patient? Are you, right? That's part of all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Amen. All right. Well, we are out of time. This has been a great show, you guys. Please, listeners, let us know you're out there. Listen, when you remark on any of the podcasting platforms that let you do that, or like when you make a comment on Google, even if you just do a thumbs up or a thumbs down, it helps with our analytics. It really does. And so we would really appreciate if you would do that. We've got a closing song that I think is totally appropriate. It's kind of comedic. It's called By the Book, and it's by Michael Purrington and the Messengers. I think you guys are going to get a kick out of this. Here we go.
Started doing it, doing it, doing it steps in order. One, two, three. Try to help somebody like they help me. Now I stay sober and life goes right. Say please in the morning and thanks at night. Another day not drinking, you let me off the hook. By the book. By the book.
The recovery music of Mr. Michael Purrington and the Messengers. Well, you can imagine going to flight school, right, to learn how to fly, sitting in ground school and listening to the instructor, but never opening the flight manual. Then the day comes when you're handed the keys to that beautiful little Cessna 150 you've been just itching to fly. You jump in the cockpit. You turn the key. And, well, you can imagine what happens next, or what doesn't happen. It may be catastrophic. Or perhaps you read the book, but only the parts of the manual that make you feel good. What kind of success as a pilot are you going to have? Little to none, I would imagine. Well, it's really no different within the rooms of the 12 steppers, is it? We have a flight manual that was written with the intent to be taught, studied, applied, implemented, and then passed on, just as it is written. No editing, no personal agenda, no other reason than to be of help to those suffering that are seeking recovery from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Now, this may not mean that you are always going to agree what's written within the pages of the big book, but whether we agree or not, it says what it says, and it makes no apologies for what it says. Why is that? Because the founders and authors knew what worked and recognized the direction that they were being given by the divine, God, our Creator. Important stuff. Definitely something to think about. Now, in closing this week's episode, I'd like to invite you to join several of us here at Came to Believe Recovery to be a part of our brand new Came to Believe Recovery 12-step Zoom meeting beginning tomorrow, Wednesday, April 3rd at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The meeting ID is 833-6252-3238, and the passcode 597-493. That's ID 833-6252-3238, and the passcode 597-493. It would be so good to see you there. Came to Believe Recovery strives to create and promote opportunities for life-changing spiritual experiences for individuals and families suffering from all forms of addiction. For more information, help, and support, visit cametobelieverecovery.org. I'd like to thank you for allowing me to be your host on this episode of the Came to Believe Recovery podcast. And I would encourage you to like, bookmark, and subscribe to this show. When you do, you will join the Take 12 Recovery Radio family and will be notified of all of our recovery-focused shows throughout the week. Until our next broadcast, when we provide the essential spiritual tools needed to thrive by sharing our experience, our strength, and our hope through our stories of how we came to believe.
This has been a production of Take 12 Recovery Radio.
Kitty, kitty, kitty. Meow.
Woof, woof.
This has been a Chicken and a Pig production.